G'day, this is Stuart Emery, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Kick-Ass.
Whoa, that's Kick-Ass. Make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey there, welcome to the show. This is David recording live from my, I sound like I'm going through puberty. Live. You can always tell when I've come back from events, my voice sounds very raspy. And well, if you're brand new, welcome to the show. If you are, you know, been around a while, thank you. Thank you so much for the support. And going to be a great show. I got a great guest on today. But I want you to think about you. Think about something. If you want something different from what you have, then it's all right to be impatient. It's all right to go get it now. You don't have to wait. It's not like everything has to take a whole lifetime. So a little impatience for your success is all right. So if I've stirred you up over the weeks, months, and years, over a million downloads in 200 countries, then be impatient, you know, go after it. There I am, beep, 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 beep. I've got that little voice going on. I'll be, I sound like I'm going through puberty, but here we go. Anyway, welcome to the show. And I did launch my new show last week. You know, a lot of you already understand that I do have a real passion for the profession of network marketing. And I have so many people that have asked me questions that I actually launched a show. We hit number one on iTunes in our first week. So hats off to Casey for a great launch. And I've been away, so, you know, he's been sort of holding up the fort on his own, just did a fabulous job. And so, and we're going to need your help. The way we need your help, if you're, and really let me tell you about the new show. The new show is called Amplified Network Marketing. You can find it on iTunes in the business or marketing arena or in the sort of that area. Again, you know, all the principles are real personal growth, but the how-tos as well in the profession, how to become a professional network marketer. And that's really, really needed because if you think about it, you know, if in the vehicle you're in, is it a vehicle where you can create wealth? And what I notice is most people don't create wealth because they just don't, they're not in the right vehicle. And so, you know, I really want you to sort of, whether you're sort of just a little curious, it may be something, go listen to four or five shows, just see what kind of interest it piques in you, especially listen to the first show. The introductory show, again, in Amplified Network Marketing. It's amplifiednetworkmarketing.com. You find it on iTunes. If you are in network marketing or thought about it or you're a seasoned pro, go listen because I'm telling you, it's going to be an amazing resource. I want it to be the number one resource in the industry. Now, if you hate network marketing, don't worry about it. Stay here. You know, I sort of whisper the occasional thing about network marketing. But, you know, I mean, what I love about network marketing is like having a personal development program with a comp plan, a compensation plan attached to it, which means you get paid to grow, which I think is really awesome. Anyway, back to my guest. She is a sweetheart and she's written a best-selling book. She describes herself as a hopeless romantic who believes the world is a beautiful place that has noble people. I love the word noble. Who uses that? It's such a great word. She says that, you know, full of noble people and that anything is possible. That being said, I look back into the 70s to find a song from the 70s that I think it will stir you up a bit. This was a great band from the 70s and probably in the top three or four, five bands of the 70s. Here we go. Let's have a listen.
In the long run, and there's still time.
is calling you to join him.
Yeah, that's what I used to do, right? Calling you to join me on the other show. Anyway, just having a great time. Beautiful day today. I actually took a day. Jen's away. Jen actually is traveling in Toronto. It's the longest we've been apart since we've been together. She's been visiting her little nephew, and she's all happy and gooey. So she gets home tomorrow. I'm planning a little romance. Lance Romance is going to be up to his tricks tomorrow, as it's our anniversary. A year ago today, I was standing on the top of Kilimanjaro. Actually, I was kneeling on the top of Kilimanjaro, proposing to Jen. So we're going to have an anniversary tomorrow. And then Valentine's right behind it. So it's going to be a whole week of romance and beautiful massages, romantic meals, you know, all of it. And some other stuff we're not going to talk about right now on the air. All right. With that being said, I'm really excited about my guest again. She's started out as a travel writer. I'll dig into her story like I always do. But again, her book, E-Squared, 9 do-it-yourself energy experiments that prove your thoughts create your reality. Imagine that. It's something you can try and it will prove to you how powerful your thoughts are. And that's why it's become such a powerful book. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the wonderful Pam Grout. So here we are. It's a very foggy day here in Kelowna, British Columbia, as I'm looking out of my studio window. Normally I sort of gaze across the lake and the mountains and it's gorgeous. Right now I can just see at the end of the deck. It's so, so thick. So it's a great day to have a great conversation. And I am really, really excited about my guest. And what I love about this story is the fact that this is an overnight success. We're going to hear all about that. But Pam, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
You know, Pam, your philosophy, this whole idea about really being able to have whatever you want in life, simple philosophy, many people have spoken about it, but there's something about the embodiment of this statement that you seem to, it sort of oozes out of every pore in your body. How did you come up with this understanding that everything in life was there waiting to be grasped?
Well, believe me, I did work a long time trying to figure this out. And I think what happened once I quit working on it, once I just kind of surrendered, I realized it was already there. In fact, I really think everybody's out there, you know, trying to find the right tool, the right, you know, 7 steps or whatever. And the truth is, as long as you're trying to find those things, looking for those 7 steps, working on that, then you're assuming that it's not already here. So at the point you finally just give up and let it all go. So to me, the best thing is just to relax and to just erase all the stuff that blocks it from coming. And that's really, I think, the crux of the matter is more erasing. We all need a blowtorch and try to get rid of all those beliefs, all those expectations, all those paradigms that we've picked up from the time we were born, because it really is all here and it's right here in this moment. And that's what we, you know, once we let go of everything else, then that's what we'll find.
Do you think it's funny by the way, when you talk about a blowtorch on the brain, I always say, wouldn't it be great if there was like a car wash for your head and you could sort of drive in and you stick your head out of the window and it's sucked into this machine and all the crap in your brain is sucked out and all you're left with is the good stuff. I'd be there like every other day.
Exactly. Well, you know, like on the iPhone, you know, you look, you hit it and then there's all those programs running and then, you know, you put your finger up and then they disappear. It's like, wouldn't it be easy if you just had your little iPhone, you could just take your finger and go, whoop, 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 that one's gone, that one's gone, that one's gone. And then you're just left with the one that you want. So that would be great. Car wash iPhone, however, yes, let's do that.
I mean, you think with the advances in science that would be there. But here's what's fascinating to me is you just started sharing this story. I my mind wandered back to the school system. You talked about, you know, this thing that we've learned from our past and our parents and education. But the idea that the school system today is still not equipped to teach kids of what's possible and that life can be easy. I mean, we're still sort of stuck in the dark ages a little bit there, right?
Oh, no, the dominant paradigm is that there is everything's limited. Life is a struggle. That is the dominant paradigm. And we have so much we have to learn. You know, we have so much we have to learn. You get sick, we rush you to the doctor. No matter what happens, we teach you, you've got to find that outside source to find the answer. And in fact, one of my favorite stories, and you may have heard this, is about the little girl that really, really wants to talk to her baby brother and her parents. Or have you heard this story?
No, I haven't, no.
Well, anyway, okay, so the parents are like, why does he want to have that alone time with the baby sister? Because, Mom, I just have to have it. He was so insistent for so long that finally the parents, you know, waiting outside the door, you know, let little Johnny go in and, you know, talk to the baby sister who had just been born, you know, a couple months ago. And he walks up to the crib, you know, peeks over and says, "Tell me about God. I'm starting to forget."
Wow.
And I think that's kind of the way it is.
Oh, wow. I just got goosebumps.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this is really fascinating because, you know, for personally, it took me, I don't know, 44 years to even start to believe what you're teaching right now. And now I'm fortunate that I live in the same world as you, and I feel this possibility everywhere in every second. But why do you think it is that we struggle as a society to really say, hey, listen, you know, the greatest asset we have are these kids. Let's create a school system of you know, absolute possibility. You know, I mean, there's just so much evidence in the world to support your theory. Why do you think that is? Why is the resistance there?
It's just a bad habit. It's like, I mean, I know someday we'll look back. You know, we look back and we look at the gladiators. We think, how could they have done that? And someday they're going to look back at what we're doing now and go, how could they have done that? You know what I mean? I think it's just, you know, it's just a bad habit. It's just a rut and a routine that we're in. And until people start questioning it, see, that's the big thing. You have to question it. And there's no reason to question it until you hit a point sometimes of crisis. I mean, that's often what will cause people to question it. Isn't there a better way? There's got to be a better way. And then at that point, you know, maybe they're open to seeing the better way. But as long as you're trying so hard to get the lessons, to get the seven steps, to get all that stuff, you know, you're never going to get it because you're seeking for something that you already have. And as long as you're going out there seeking for it, well, it's not there. It's inside. And everything we see is really just a reflection of what's inside. I mean, it's like we're not really looking at the world. We're looking at our brains or our minds. You know, we're looking at our consciousness basically out there. And if we're seeing this fabulous, wonderful world, and that's our consciousness. If we're seeing, you know, all the pain, the struggle, the limitation, that's what's in our inner world. So it's really all about turning inward and cleaning up the picture there. I mean, you don't look in the mirror and go, oh, wow, you know, I need to, you know, switch that blue eyeshadow or whatever. I mean, you know, on the mirror, you don't apply that to the mirror. You do it to yourself. I mean, that's the secret right there.
You know, it's really interesting, you know, this idea we see the world as we are. And for people listening to the show, and just so you know, I don't know if you know this, the show's in about just shy of 200 countries. And this month we hit 1 million downloads. So a lot of people listening around the world.
Oh, that's great. Hi, everybody.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Hey, it's Pam. Hey, Pam. Yeah. but this idea of seeing the world as we are, I mean, you know, for people who are sort of awake, let's say we're awake at the wheel. I mean, yeah, traveling through airports for me is always fun because you really get to see this combination of people from all over the world who are stuck in stories and frustration. You know, there's nothing more than running for a plane or missing a plane or a plane being delayed or, you know, a problem with the engine, to see human nature boiling to the surface and how few people really live in a world of grace. And do you know, when you walk down the road, do you see the struggle? I mean, is it like because you're awake and you kind of understand this philosophy, do you actually notice how many people are asleep?
Oh yeah, no, I'm not so far into the joy and the bliss that I no longer see that anymore. I know it's not true, but I still do see the struggle. Not so much in my own life, but I definitely see people that are experiencing that. And I think, you know, I feel real compassion and I realize, hey, there is another way. But until they're ready to hear it, I mean, it's not like I go around preaching. I mean, I think the best way is just to be in that space as much as you can. And people say, hey, what is it? What is it you do? I mean, just tell me. I want to know the secret. So I think that's the best thing. But no, I do still see it, of course. I mean, you can't turn on the television without seeing it. I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of still there.
Sure. Now tell me about, I'm someone who really loves travel. I mean, you're a travel writer. I'm going to get into 16 books, by the way, you've written. And I want to talk a little bit about your latest book, which has become a blockbuster. And, you know, really want to encourage people to have a read of this. But, you know, we talk about your travel writing. The idea that you've been on all the continents, I think, just bar Antarctica, right? That's the only continent.
Right. And I was scheduled to go there last January, and the trip ended up not coming off. But I'll get there. You know, I've got to save something to look forward to. Yeah, I've been to all the continents, yeah.
Can I ask how old you are so people sort of listening in get a
read? Oh, I'm 57.
All right. You're a young'un. You're a little 57 is the new 28, right?
Yeah, exactly.
but talk about travel writing, because I mean, so much of the world. I mean, when people step out of their comfort zones and often travel into the, you know, other worlds to see it, they'll often sort of recreate their own world. You know, there's sort of all inclusive resorts that kind of surround them and bind them to one experience, where the country itself is just teeming with experiences and wonder. Well, what was it like, and how did you get into sort of stepping into other people's world and really experiencing it and being able to sort of capture the magic of other cultures and bring it to paper?
Well, I've always loved to travel. That's how I got into travel writing. In fact, I was already traveling. I was already writing about it. I didn't even know there was a field called travel writing, and I happened to call an editor. But as far as what you were saying, one of my books is for National Geographic. It's on volunteer vacations, and I really think that's one of the best ways to get outside that bubble, because you're right. You can go to another country, and you can definitely basically recreate your own country. You know, they have all the the resorts, and you had no idea that, you know, the guy that maybe just brought you your breakfast, his kids are at home, you know, playing with a soccer ball that they made out of a bag that they stuck together, you know. So yeah, it's really easy to miss out on what's there. I mean, again, we're creating our world by what's coming from the outside. But so yeah, I really believe in getting in and, you know, getting to know the people. I think that's always the best way to do the traveling. But as far as how I got into travel writing, again, I was always traveling. I didn't grow up doing international travel. My father was a Methodist minister, and, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of money, but my dad loved to travel. And so we would load up the little station wagon, and we, with the, you know, family, there's three kids in the back, mom and dad in the front, and we drove all over the United States. So I started out traveling there. And then as I, got a little bit older, and I've always loved to write. I mean, I love to write about everything. I'm always documenting everything I do. And so I was, you know, writing about travel. And then I had sent a pitch to an editor, and she, you know, had noticed I'd been picking coffee in Nicaragua, and then I'd been somewhere else, I think, at some villa. I mentioned it in my query letter, because I was talking about, you know, just the field of being a freelance writer. And she calls me up. She says, "Do you do travel writing?" And you never say no to an editor. So I said, "Oh, yes, of course." And she says, "Where are you going next?" And, well, I wasn't going anywhere, but a friend of mine was going to Tampa. And I said, "Well, I'm going to Tampa." "Okay, I'd like 1,000 words on blah, 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 blah this date." So she gave me a deadline. And so I called my friend, "Can I go to Tampa with you?" You know? And that was kind of how I got into it officially. And then I came to find out that, gosh, you're a travel writer. People are always inviting you to go places. So that's pretty cool. I mean, I'm constantly getting invited to, you know, to go all over the place. So that's really great. It's a wonderful opportunity.
I think you're waking up in me something here. Let's talk about, I mean, if people want to read your blog, pamgrout.com, GROUT.com. And your blogs are there, and all your wonderful, I mean, this is outside of the book. This is stuff they can just go access right now. So I encourage you to go to pamgrout.com. Pam, talk about one of your favorite experiences in your travel writing. So here you are, you know, the whole world's your lobster, you know, and you're out there and you're sort of capturing a story. What's one of your favorite stories that you've captured?
You know, people always ask me, "Oh, what's your favorite country?" Whatever, and I always say the last place I was, and the last place I was in Namibia. I went to the Adventure Travel World Summit just recently, and I love this story. A baboon came into my room, came in through the window, so that was kind of a fun story that just recently happened. But anyway, that's sort of how it is for me. It's like, where was I last, and what was the best story? But I've had a lot of great travel experiences. My daughter and I went to Ecuador one summer. We taught English up in a little village up in the Andes. So yeah, I've had a lot of great stories. I actually spent a year in Australia, and that was a real highlight. Kind of had a lot of great experiences with traveling.
And if there's one country right now that you're saying, you know, I've been itching to go there, haven't been there yet. You mentioned Antarctica is something on your list, but is there a country in the world yet that you're saying, "Hey, you know what? As soon as I'm off to this place," or are you just open to anywhere?
I'm open to anywhere. Next year, I'm going to be traveling a lot, speaking about my book. So most of my travels over the years have been to do travel writing, and I'm still actively doing lots of travel writing. But next year, I have a lot of trips lined up to actually speak about the book. And that's like opening up a whole new experience for me, because I really consider myself more of a writer than a speaker. But, you know, in this particular field, most people are both. So, you know, I'm growing into this idea of speaking, and I have been asked to go, I mean, all over the world to go speak about this book. So in fact, the first one's coming up in March, the first international one. I'm doing a couple of practice runs here and here in my own little village.
Well,
and then I'm heading off to London and Germany in March, early March.
Awesome. Let's talk about the book, E Squared. Talk about the, what was the inspiration? Because I'm obviously there's something about a book where it starts. How did this start and what was the inspiration for it?
Well, I think there's 9 spiritual principles, and I figured, you know, we all know these principles, or I don't know if we all do, but a lot of people, these principles have been out there for a while, that, you know, what you focus on expands, that it's important to focus on gratitude, you know, those kind of things. They've been out there for a while. Well, so if they've been out there for a while and people have access to it, why aren't they putting them to practice? Why are we still seeing a lot of the struggle and limitation, that kind of thing? And so I decided to create these really easy 48-hour experiments. It's like, let's put the pedal to the metal. I mean, let's just really make sure, let's prove this to ourselves. Does this work or doesn't it? And I think as you see the real-time scientific proof, you're more apt to put them into practice. So basically what I did is I chose 9 spiritual principles that I think are really important. And then I came up with a little experiment, just a short little quick, you know, bite-sized experiment to try. Does this work or doesn't it work? You know, there's no need to try to, I'm going to convince you that this works. I mean, you have to see it in your own life. And so that's why this is important. This is about, you know, putting yourself as out there as a guinea pig. Does this work or doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Sounds like the Tim Ferriss thing, right? talk a little bit about, when you started this, obviously you were the guinea pig. Can you talk about one of the experiments and one of the principles and what was the result? I mean, when was the aha moment either for you or people that you were experimenting with before the book came out?
Well, I think the thing that's been so aha to me is just how well these are easily replicated by everybody. I mean, I get stories every single morning from people. You know, I open up my email and there's, you know, hundreds of stories from people that are doing these experiments, these amazing miracles that have happened. But to talk about one specific experiment, the first one is probably the key one. It's the first one that there is this force that has your best interest at heart. There is a force. It's a positive force that has your back. And in the first experiment, I talk a little bit about part of the reason that people don't know this is they've always called that force God. And I think the word God has a lot of baggage. And for some people that they're very comfortable using the word God, and that's fine. But we really need to think of this force more like we think of electricity. I mean, you can plug in your toaster at any time and have toast. You know, you don't have to beg over your Mr. Coffee Maker. Oh, please, Mr. Coffee Maker, bring me the coffee. I mean, you know, we just know it's there. And that's the way we want to look at this force. It is there. It's there. It wants to, it has our best interest at heart. It has our back. So we really need to know this, because as long as we're afraid of it, we feel like we have to do all these things to access it, we're not going to be using it. So it's like, it's a simple thing. It's there. It's just like electricity. Put it to use.
I want to talk a little bit about the comment with the God comment, because I think I have a lot of listeners who have very, very deep faith. But what's interesting about somehow, I mean, I witness my students and I witness the people I work with sometimes who have a faith. You know, what you're talking about is plugging into something and utilizing it. And often with faith, it can be almost like waiting. It's more of a passive exercise. You know, go there, you pray. And it's not a question of saying, well, here, all of God's power is in my hands and in my body. I'm going to be able to walk out here and utilize it whenever I want. That isn't often what you see, right?
No, you're exactly right. We have this idea, this, again, one of those paradigms that needs to be changed, that this force is sometimes available, sometimes not. This force, you know, we have to do so many things. We have to pray so many hours. We have to do so many good works. We have to tithe. We have to put ashes on our head. I mean, there's all these rules, all these things we have to do to access this force. It's not like that. That is wrong. That's, we were taught wrong, that it's there. I mean, it's around us all the time. It's us. I mean, it's moving through us. We're part of this big, giant field of potentiality. I call it the field of the FP in the book, the field of infinite potentiality. Again, because the word God has so much baggage, but for people to feel comfortable calling it God, that's good too. You can call it whatever you want. It doesn't matter what you call it. What matters is that you put it to use. I mean, this is a practical thing about changing your life, and it's just a shame that people aren't using it actively. I think what you said, passively, that's how people do it. You know, we have to think of it the way we think of. We don't call, or, you know, we don't place an order on Amazon and think, oh, is it going to come? Is it not going to come? We place the order, we know it's going to come. We wait, you know, we give us the time, we know when it's going to come. And that's how we have to approach this. And that's kind of what the book is. It's like, hey, this is something we can count on. All we have to do is put in the order and it's there.
And what I love about this, because I do a lot of trainings with, and my last training was 3,000 people in the room and 4,000 people watching live stream. So 7,000 people, and many of them have different backgrounds, different walks of life, you know, different colors, different cultures, different everything. And certainly when it comes to faith, I often have to put the disclaimer in the room and say, look, whatever your faith is, I am not trying to change that. So if I use the word universe, so you use infinite potentiality, if I use the word universe, as that comes out of my mouth, when it's in the ether, you can change it into God, Buddha, Allah, however you want to determine that. But really what we're talking about here is this deep connection to something so powerful, and we have the access to it whenever we want, right?
Exactly. Yes, 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 yes. And it doesn't matter what we talk about. I mean, we spend a lot of time arguing about what to call it and this, no, my way's right, your way. You know, I mean, we've wasted all this time arguing over which is the right thing.
Well, it would be interesting to see, you know, I mean, when we look at, if we saw whole cultures, and I suppose I should ask you that, are there cultures that you've witnessed or seen that embody the potentiality more than other cultures? And in other words, kids that are raised up knowing they're powerful, knowing they have this access whenever they want, they can plug it in whenever they want. And they're, well, I suppose in your belief, it's constantly plugged in, right?
Oh, you said it's constantly plugged in?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a certain culture. You know, I don't know that I would divide it that way, that there's one culture that knows it all. I think there's people in every culture that have totally gotten it.
Right.
But I don't know that I'd pick one culture that across the board has it. Because if so, we'd all be moving there. We'd all be doing it. But there's certainly people in every culture that have gotten it, that are awake, that are living these principles.
You know, it was interesting. There's a school in Yelm, Washington. I don't know if you've heard about it, but they teach kids from a very young age. And I've met these kids, and these kids are like, you know, 8, 9, 10, and they have this complete and unshakable belief in their own potential and the possibility around them. And they do things like blindfolded archery, and you'll see them with blindfolds on being able to shoot bullseyes, you know, because they understand this connection to their ultimate power.
So cool.
Yeah, but when you talk to them, it's like the weirdest thing. You know, I got, you're having a chat to an 8-year-old who sees the wonder in the world. And I mean, it really caught me by surprise that this child had been, I mean, by the way, I was at a sort of a little event where there was three of these kids from the school, and each one of them had this just complete belief in everything you were talking about, but seemed to be in it so awake and yet so able to articulate. And I'm doing a terrible job trying to articulate what they said. But then, you know, they'd wrap a blindfold on and they'd be able to pick up a bow and arrow and shoot a bullseye and just look like, yeah, this is normal. it was amazing to watch.
Oh, that is so cool. I'm going to find out more about that school for sure. You have definitely intrigued me with that.
Yeah. So let's talk about one of the experiments. So we talk about this first, the first principle in your book, the first principle. What was one of the experiment that you wrapped around it so people can sort of maybe try it? And, you know, there'd be countries in the world right now where maybe they can't even access this book at this point, that very, very remote, but maybe they can sort of tap into this genius.
Okay, well, the experiment one, let's just talk about that. That's kind of the underlying principle, and I call it the Dude Abides principle. It, above all else, I've made this book fun. I feel like anything that's going to be sustainable has to be fun. So I call it the Dude Abides, which, of course, is a takeoff on the Big Lebowski. And the actual principle is there is an invisible energy force or field of infinite possibilities. So that's the thesis. That's the hypothesis. Now, if that's true, then I can access this at any time. So what I do is I ask people to say, hey, if this is true, I want to see clear, unmistakable proof of your existence. And to top it off, I'd like to ask for a blessing. And you've got 48 hours. Okay, so let's get going. And I've got lab report sheets at the very end. And then people, fill in the time. I've got like a question, like, for example, the principle, the Dude Abides, the theory, there is an invisible energy force or field of infinite possibilities, and it's yours for the asking. And then the question, because in every scientific experiment you ask a question, is does the FP exist? Does this field of potentiality exist? And then the hypothesis is, if there is a 24/7 energy force equally available to everyone, I can access it at any time simply by paying attention. Furthermore, if I ask the force for a blessing, giving it a specific time frame and clear instructions, it'll send me a gift and say, my pleasure. And then, you know, you record the date and the time, you write down your deadline, and then you just say, hey, okay, I'm waiting. And I mean, I put the approach in the book. It says, I hate to break it to you, FP, but folks are starting to talk. They're starting to wonder, is this guy for real? I mean, really? Like, it'd be so much skin off your chin to come down here and call off this crazy hide-and-seek thing you've been playing. I'm giving you exactly 48 hours to make your presence known. I want a thumbs up, a clear sign, something that cannot be written off as coincidence. And then I've got little research notes. So anyway, that's the lab report sheet for the first experiment.
Hey, do you know Mike Dooley?
I do. I mean, I don't know him. I've never met him, but I have heard of him. I've had a ton of his students have contacted me. Actually, I went to lunch with one of them the other day.
Oh, you should. He's a really, really close friend of mine. I married him this year in Mexico and was emceed his wedding. So, but you and him have a very similar style. I mean, even listening to you speak there, I mean, he could have written those words. I mean, his notes from the universe is very sort of nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But I think you guys will be great friends and I'd love to introduce you. But so now you've said you've got these people who have gone out there and they've embraced this book. It's gone, you know, you've done 16 books, but this has become one of those mega books that really people have been waiting for, like The Secret. And talk about some of the things that people have said to you about this one experiment. What's gone on? What are some of the great things you've heard them, you know, that's occurred as they've been waiting their 48 hours?
Well, naturally, there's all kinds of stories about people that have, you know, brought in money. I mean, the largest sum of money that somebody got during their 48-hour period was $100,000, which is pretty impressive. And that's the thing that a lot of people have a lot of baggage around, so money is always a big one. But one of my favorite stories, and I've told this many times because it was one of the first ones that came in, and I just love this story, but there was a gal in the second principle, it's the Volkswagen Jetta principle, and what it says is that you draw out of that field of potentiality whatever you're focused upon. I mean, that's kind of the gist of it, but I call it the Volkswagen Jetta principle because basically, you know, once you start, you know, you decide on some car you want, you think, wow, it's going to be unique. I'm going to be the only one to have it. And then you go out and look and you realize they're everywhere. So, you know, it's like you're suddenly noticing. So anyway, she decides she's going to look for white feathers during this time period. And she just did what I suggest sometimes, set it and forget it. She goes off with her family geocaching for this weekend. You know, she had made that intention. Oh, she's going to see white feathers. They're out geocaching. The last thing in her mind is thinking about this experiment. They're driving home, coming back on the freeway after a successful day of geocaching, and suddenly her little daughter says, Mom, look, somebody must have killed a chicken. Along the highway, the traffic slowed down. Along the highway for 4 miles, it was lined with white feathers. I mean, for 4 miles, they drove along. The traffic kind of stopped. And she said, I don't know if a mattress truck turned over or what, but they were, you know, lined with white feathers. So finally, the traffic clears back up. They get home. On their mat, when they're walking in the front door, is one white feather. And she says the message she got was, hey, I can give you so much more than you ask, but, you know, you want a white feather? Here, I'll show you. Mm. So anyway, that was kind of a cool story. And I have told that many times because, again, it was one of the first ones, and I remember it. But, no, I get different stories every day. Another one that I one time blogged about was a guy who had decided to see red balls and didn't see it in the time frame, you know, that he had set it up, because that does happen sometimes. You know, time's an illusion anyway. But anyway, he didn't see it. He was kind of disappointed. He's like, oh, darn, this doesn't work. He's driving to work, and on the same intersection where he'd seen something else that he was trying to manifest, out of nowhere, this little red rubber ball bounces out into the intersection. He has no idea where it even came from. He sent me a picture of it, and he put the abracadabra. That's one of the experiments I call the abracadabra, which is, of course, the word that says, I will create as I speak. But anyway, so he holds up this red rubber ball that says abracadabra, and I ran that on my blog. So that was kind of a fun story, too. But, you know, people that have been reunited with family members, I mean, it goes across the board, found true love. I mean, just all kinds of things. And these are little 48-hour experiments. These aren't like lifetime goals. I mean, I'm writing E-Cube, which is a follow-up, and in that one, I really encourage people to make this a lifetime, to make it something they do all the time. But this is just a little experiment. You got to get your feet wet, and you got to realize, wow, this really does work. And most people get so excited, they just, you know, can't wait to do the next one and, you know, keep it going.
It's interesting, you know, you talk about, you know, the idea of, I suppose a thought I have is, imagine we're already in it. Everything we want is sort of, we're already immersed. I think of it as like a big quantum soup. But so we're immersed in everything. Everything, we're connected to everything we already want. This idea, though, of the negative thinking, the way that we're conditioned to see the obstacles, and we haven't spent a lot of time talking about that, but I know your sort of work and a lot of the work you've done over the 16 books and the writing is is really to help people sort of get past that limited thinking and that obstacle. And why do you think it is? Again, I know we've talked about education, but you know, even someone reading your book, why do you think people struggle with letting go of the old story and sort of just jumping in with both feet saying, well, okay, let me try this story on for the rest of my life, because it's a much nicer story than the one I'm in right now, which is, you know, there's always problems. I can only earn this much money. You know, I don't deserve, I'm not worthy, blah, blah, blah. You know, you hear the stories, but why do you think people don't try it on like a coat and say, you know what, I'm doing it for the rest of my life?
Well, see, that's why I say, let's just entice them in. Everybody can give up 48 hours to give it a try, but it's just a bad habit. And we have been doing it for so long. You know, we spent all these years looking at life that way. That's how we're indoctrinated for the time we're first born. So it's just a bad habit, but that's all it is a bad habit. And here's the thing. I'm a student of the Course in Miracles. This is not a hard program, but it's very different. It's very different than what we're used to. And it really is just a bad pattern. All our neural pathways in our brain are set up, you know, to look for problems, to look for limitation. And again, we're going to see exactly what we're looking for. And it's just a bad habit. But there's all this evidence, because that's what we're looking for. That's what we're seeing. So people think it's true. They think, oh, well, it's true. I do see all these problems out there. That's true. And they want to hold on to that. And because this is what I see. And it's like, this is what I see. This is what I'm reporting to my senses. They don't get it, that they're seeing it, because that's what they're expecting, that's what they're believing. But it really is nothing but a bad habit, and like any bad habit, it can be changed. In the book, I say it's like housebreaking a puppy. You know, you just keep taking that puppy back outside and showing it where it's supposed to go, and that's how this works. You know, we have to just keep, our brain's going to keep trying to show us this other thing, but we just keep saying, nope, I'm going to. So, you know, it takes practice. I practice this stuff all the time. I practice being
I was going to ask you that question. You know, obviously, you know, it's easy for me. I mean, I teach a lot of principles, and I believe I teach only the things I actually embody and live. I don't teach any theories I read in a book that I don't actually, I actually have in my life. But you know, when you fall off the wagon, when you catch yourself, you know, having a less than enlightened moment, I mean, is it, because you've practiced so much, do you find it easy to jump, you know, to get back into the world of possibility? Or do you wander in the other world for a few minutes, a few hours, a couple of days, or does it never happen at all?
It happens less and less, but certainly, I mean, I spent a lot of time wandering that other. I mean, I think, I've spent many a time. I mean, now I know if I start noticing, you know, thoughts that are unpleasant and things I don't want, I'm much quicker to turn it around and to realize, yes, it's a simple matter. So I just try to recognize it. And then kind of when you can encapsulate it, you know, it's like, okay, this is what it is. You encapsulate it, or, you know, make it small, and then you grow bigger. So I think sometimes it is good to get a handle on it, say, okay, this is what I'm thinking. This is a thought, because otherwise it could just kind of this amorphous blob that just keeps growing. So it's good to kind of contain it and say, okay, this is the thought that I'm having, but here's the bigger truth, you know, and then you put a bigger circle around, and then you grow into that. So yeah, for me, I've wandered in the desert, you know, much time, but less and less now. You know, as I practice these principles more and more, it's like, it's really pretty, I very quickly will identify, oh wait, this, I'm not feeling good. This isn't right. What's going on here? So I'll encapsulate it and, you know, move on to a bigger possibility. So yes, I spend less and less time in that zone than I used to.
You know, there's that wonderful saying, you know, or sort of a bit of a joke, and this isn't a slant on anyone who's clairvoyant, but there's that often that, you know, that joke that says, you know, how come you don't hear about clairvoyants winning the lottery? You know, but you know, with this book, when you write a book like this, if it's all true, then you would expect it to become a blockbuster, right? Because obviously your very vision of writing a book is that, you know, it's to something that would people would want and would become a bestseller. Do you feel that maybe because of the way the book was written and the focus that you had to have on each of these experiments, do you think it plays any bearing in the success of the book?
Well, last year on New Year's Eve 2013, going into 2013, the book was going to be released January 28th. I was in a beach in Georgia, and I went out there on the beach, and in big giant letters with a stick, I wrote, E squared will be an international bestseller. And then I let, you know, the waves come in and wash it out into the world. Well, of course, that's what I expected. That was my intention. That was what I wanted. And that's what happened. And then it was so successful. Just recently, I was out at a beach in Florida. My friend's daughter got married, and I put Oprah Winfrey will be calling to talk about E-Squared or something like that. I don't remember the exact wording. But like 2 weeks later, her producers contacted my publicist that, you know, were asking for video. So it's like, whoa, this beach thing really does work. But no, I certainly did make the intention that this book would help a lot of people, that it would go across the world. I mean, it's been translated now into 30 different languages. And but, you know, at the same time I'm saying that, you know, yes, I definitely made those intentions. I also really believe in that principle of set it and forget it. Because I think once we get involved in the how, you know, I think our job really is to come up with the what. But if we start getting into the how, like what made me think of that, you mentioned the lottery. So many people, they want to win the lottery. Well, you know, that's one avenue to find abundance, I suppose. Or that's one avenue to get wealthy. But that's giving the field of infinite potentiality one tiny little road on how to get there. So I think our job really is to come up with the what. You know, hey, I want to be abundant, if that's what your goal is. And then let the FP figure it out, you know. So yes, I definitely did make those intentions, but I didn't, and I did ride it in the beach, you know, with a stick. But I didn't go into... you know, great machinations, you know, trying to make it happen.
Yeah, you weren't chanting on top of the mountain with ashes on your head.
Right, exactly.
but I want to sort of look at this idea then. We've got this in a lot of people's minds that, okay, I got E squared in my hand. I'm going to focus for 48 hours, right? And obviously people are starting to see the results and use the word miracles, which I totally understand. But when we look at what... the world that a lot of people are trapped in, I feel, is when crap happens. You know, there's a divorce, there's a car accident, there's this. I've had people on the show who have lost their legs, who've lost their eyes, you know, through accidents. And in that moment, this idea that we're connected to this powerful source, that everything that happens, whether it, you know, good, bad, indifferent, is happening for an absolute reason. And I ask this in all my rooms. I say, raise up your hand if you truly believe that everything's happening for a reason. And people all put their hand up, you know, and then you say, well, what about the crappy stuff? Oh, well, maybe not, you know. Yet I can't tell you how everyone on the show has said to me, like we had a guy on recently who lost both his legs in an accident. And he talks about he would never go back and reclaim his legs. Yet a lot of people losing their legs, it would be this life-ending event. And, you know, suddenly I've lost everything. You don't understand. I don't have legs. Whereas him right now, it changed the course of his life because he accepted this happening. Can you talk a little bit about the negative things and how truly, I would say, in all things that happen, not just the positive things, but all things that happen, we don't understand the plan, but eventually it may be a year, it may be 2 years, it may be 10 years when we look back and say, wow, I would never change that. Do you hear that a lot?
All the time. And I think it's so true. It's all about how our thoughts about each event that happened. I mean, the less we can judge anything, I mean, the truth of it is we don't have the tools to judge. You know, that's our problem. We're so busy judging everything. This is good. This is bad. We really don't know. And so we need to resign as our own judge of anything that happens. The quicker we can do that, the better. I mean, even judging something as good is a dangerous trap because that insinuates there's a bad, a flip side. So judging anything is always, you know, to our detriment. It's best not to judge and to be grateful and thankful for every single thing that happens. And people say, you're cracked. How can I be grateful that I lost my two legs? Or how can I be grateful, you know, that I was in the Boston Marathon bombing or whatever? But I just heard a story about a guy there that he, you know, was one of the ones that was hospitalized, goes in and just recently got married to the nurse that had taken care of him, and, you know, it's the love of his life. He's so happy. So yes, we cannot judge whether something is good or bad. All we can do is embrace it and love it and love everything that happens and trust that, you know, again, the universe has our back. So the less we judge things as good or bad and know that it's leading us and that we are being directed and our good is wanting to shower down upon us, you know, but our judgments will block it. Our judgments, our negativity, it blocks it. It's like we're saying, I want to be unhappy. I want this to be bad. As long as we're judging it bad, that's what we're going to get.
Mm. So simple, isn't it? I mean, when we look at this, you know, I used to teach this, I still teach it, I suppose. I haven't done it for a while, but, you know, an event happens in our life. We either make up a story about it or we don't, you know, so the event, with a story equals a problem. The event, no story, no problem. Same event, you know, again, one guy loses his legs, no problem. You know, Rick Hansen, you know, he ended up becoming the man in motion and traveled around the world on his wheelchair, became an ambassador for countries and, you know, really a best-selling author, a speaker, and, you know, absolutely the inspiration of millions and millions of people, affected change in the world. Another guy loses his leg in a similar way. He was hitchhiking when he lost his legs, Rick Hansen. And another guy does it. And again, life's over because the story he has is so, so different. Within the story of these E squared, if people were to embrace the all the principles and simply just say, hey, you know what? I'm going to practice these on a daily basis. And I realize it's like training a puppy. And I love that analogy. All right. But I'm going to keep practicing these. What do you think the outcome? What kind of lives will people lead as they embrace E squared?
Well, they're going to be happy. And as you're happy, I mean, I love to tell a story about part of the reason I think this book has done so well, my joy channels are wide open. I mean, that's what we want to do, is to become happy, to be grateful for everything. Because once your channels are open, all this good is just going to come pouring in. We block it, again, by our judgments, by our negativity, by our belief that we're not, that we have to earn this stuff and that we have to be good enough. And we have to, so we're so busy out there trying to earn everything. So as we become more joyful, I mean, if that was one takeaway that I want people to get, is really truly that you do have control over your thoughts, and your thoughts can be happy or unhappy. And it doesn't matter what happens. You can lose your legs, you can be happy, you can be unhappy. You can, win $1 million, you can be happy, you can be unhappy. It doesn't matter. But what matters is how you consciously think about it. And you were talking about, you know, how do I get back on the wagon or whatever when I get off? I am a real big one on questioning my thoughts. You know, is that thought true? Because we have so many thoughts that are not true. And so if we really realize, you know, oh, the world's going to hell in a handbasket, is that a true thought? I mean, or, oh, it's so scary out there, is that true? I mean, we really do have to really examine, and what do we want to be true? You know, we don't have to be commenting and judging on what's happened. We are creators. We need to imagine what we want to be true. And we really need to, you know, live in joy and be grateful and happy. And whatever happens, and know that it's leading us somewhere to great joy. I mean, we're in great joy right now. It's this moment of being in great joy. And then the more we're in that moment of great joy, the more we live in great joy, and it just continues. It grows. I put on my blog the other day, you know, that little thing from the Frankenstein movie where all of a sudden they go, "It's alive," you know, where, you know, you have enough joy gathers around, or you open those channels enough and it just comes rushing in and it's right there and you're really aware of it.
It seems to me you've given us a quick, we're getting close to the end of the show here, but given us a really great litmus test. If you're sitting at home right now and you are not living in joy in each moment, and I'm not saying you can't have bad moments, because I mean, things happen and you can have a bad moment, but I mean, do you want to have a bad, you know, hour or a bad half day or a bad day or a bad week? But I mean, a lot of people, I mean, we get out of bed, one small thing happens and it's sort of this cascade of one negative thought behind the next, and before long the whole day's been miserable and the kids' life is miserable, right? So if we can look at our life and we say, you know, I'm really joyful, and I love what that you said, my joy channels are wide open. What a great thing to think about, my joy channels. So think about it right now as you're listening at home, wherever you are, whatever country you are your joy channels wide open? And if not, if you can't say, look, I am in absolute joy and feeling like blissful in each moment, then maybe you need to read this book. Because there's obviously something that Pam, that you totally understand and embody, that's allowed you to create this wonder. And really what I love is the way you've talked about, there's no struggle. It's not like you're expecting the timeline. What did you say? Set it and let it go? Is that what you said?
Set it and forget it.
Set it and forget it. This idea that, you know, you just realize that you've set things in motion. You're not attached to the deadline. You're just going to keep the joy open. You're going to keep stepping forward, and you're going to keep practicing these simple steps. And would you say that they are pretty simple for everyone to follow?
They're so simple. Like I keep saying over and over again, this isn't hard to do. It's just so different. So, I mean, I have these things, you know, in the next book, you know, these calisthenics that you get up and do, like pump your fist in the air, you know, like act like a soccer player, you know, when they've just scored a goal line. I mean, you know, get your body. I mean, you can change your state by changing, you know, how your body reacts. I mean, your thoughts, of course, are in these patterns or in these loops but you can change. There's so many different ways to change it, but really it is possible to get happy no matter what happened to you. And it's really important to do that. And it's really important, like those first 5 minutes of the day, like the first thing I say every morning when I get up is something amazingly awesome is going to happen to me today. That's the first thought that I have. In fact, I call it my little AA 2.0 program. You know, there's the AA with 12 steps. Mine's the 2 steps. And the first one is to say something amazingly awesome is going to happen to me. And then my second step is I have this little power posse and I text them 3 blessings from the day before. And it has to be something that's different, you know, something, I mean, you know, I've always been one that was big about gratitude, but now we do, it has to be something different. So each day, I mean, I'm Lewis and Clark out there. I'm a scout out there looking for blessings. I mean, that's my mission. So, you know, so you start your day like that and, now, you know, it can't
you
help
said,
but
go
right.
You said that pretty fast, but you said, did you say a love posse? Is that what you called it?
Oh, my power posse.
Oh, a power posse. Okay.
I know. I talk really fast when I get excited.
No, I love it. I love it. I just want to make sure they get it because what that accountability to blessings. I mean, the Lewis and Clark of blessings. I mean, that wouldn't be a bad thing for someone to be saying on your deathbed, would it? You know, she was the Lewis and Clark of blessings. She went out every single day and found joy and she shared it with her power posse, which impacted the world. I mean, what a great epitaph, right? You know, I'm so sad that this is coming to an end. Because I just feel like we're just getting going here and you're such a joy to talk to. The show is called The Kick-Ass Life. I wonder if you could describe to me what you feel in your words, in your world. What is a kick-ass life to you?
A kick-ass life?
Yeah, a kick-ass life. The show is called The Kick-Ass Life. To have a kick-ass life, to have a, you know, I mean, whatever interpretation of kick-ass you have.
Well, you know, I think that's, I love that. I love your title. That's part of the reason I was like so happy to be on your show. I think it would mean a life that really sparkles and to really be aware of that potential that's in each moment. I mean, it's like in this moment, there is the potential to, I mean, what we've done with energy mostly is blow things up, but there's also the energy to do anything else, you know? So here's all this potential energy right here in this moment. And I guess a kick-ass life, we're really using this potential, this great energy to create magnificent things, to create love and peace and joy for everybody. I mean, I really do want the entire world to get this and to be happy. So kick-ass life would be, sparkling in this moment.
That is awesome. Well, listen, I want to say thank you so much. I look forward to having you back on. And when we go offline here, I'm going to give you I'm going to send an email to both you and Mike because I do believe you two need to meet. I think you're going to be really good friends. He's an extraordinary human being and it's like listening to the same person speak. So I know that you can certainly join forces on different things you're doing.
Oh, that's cool. Well, you know, you're not the first person that's told me that. I mean, I hadn't heard of Mike Dooley, but then all of these people, you know, that go to his workshops and stuff, contacted me, said, oh, you know, you would love him. And his sister actually does follow my blog, and I do hear from her a little bit. So I'm familiar, you know, with him, and I've gone on to read some of his books, and I do love them. So, yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to get in touch with him.
It's funny. I'm looking over my shoulder here, and one of his books is right there. It's Infinite Possibilities, and that's why I'm saying even his book titles sound like you, don't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Hey, listen, fam, thank you so much. Thanks for being in the show.
Thank you.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Didn't I tell you it should be fun? Just a great lady. And I love something that says, hey, just try it. Just try it. And, you know, the idea that, you know, it takes practice to change bad habits. And it does, you know, and just this idea that you can relax and just let go and really get the life you want, you know. And so I think that it's, again, you may need to listen to the show a second time, but certainly get the book and, you know, spend some time with her. It's going to be worth it. So that being said, I want to play another song here before we come back. A couple of things I want to share with you. And we'll wrap this puppy up. Here we go. Back to the 70s.
So you think you could tell you tell a green field from a cold steel rail, a smile from a veil? Do you think you can tell?
Oh yeah.
Did they get you to train?
Well, 1975. Pink Floyd. Again, if you want to get the songs, the specific songs, you don't know them, go to the show notes and thekickasslife.com. And again, I want to remind you to join me on my new show and give it a ride. Give it a test drive. Give it at least five shows. The first five are already up. We did that the first week. And my guest on Wednesday is going to be no other than five-time Olympian and Olympic gold and bronze medalist, Nat Cook, who happens to be a very, very good friend of mine. We were like, I don't know, I think we were born in the same embryo or something like that, but we're not born or created. We've just become fast and hard friends. And what I'll do, I'll ask Casey to put a little video of us. I have one from us at center field at the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, playing some ball, and we were doing this little promo video, but it sure is cute. Obviously, I hadn't thrown a football very much before because I threw it about 9 miles ahead of her. I don't know how fast I thought she was, but again, remember this, everyone. Please, please, please. I know it takes a little bit of a pain in the neck to do, but if you can write a review and give us a star rating, I've been thinking about this, and what I'm going to start doing. If you can write a review, give me a star rating, right? I mean, I'm not going to tell you which star to give me. Give me five if you think it's great. If it's not, give me a lower one. I don't mind. That's not my thing, right? I'd rather you be honest. And if you send me a private message and you say, hey, and just do a screen capture, and if you don't know how to do it, just go on Google and say, how do I take a screen photo? Just send that to me, and I'm going to give away 1 hour of free coaching on any subject, whether it's money, relationships, it doesn't matter. You know what I talk about. What I teach on network marketing. If you want an hour of free coaching with me personally, we do it through Skype, so we get to know each other well. And then all you got to do, and I'll do a draw from everyone that does it, and we'll do it once a month. I'll give away an hour, and I may even up it. I may even up it to a couple of hours. We'll see how it is. I typically always, whenever I give away coaching sessions, I always end up giving a lot more than people think they're going to get. But anyway, so let's do an hour for now and then we'll see how it goes. So all you got to do is on either show, the Kick-Ass Life show or Amplified Network Marketing show, is to write a review, give it a star rating. And then all you got to do is send me or Casey, you can send us the screenshot of your particular, and it, by the way, you got to know this, when you first put it into iTunes, it doesn't show up right away. What happens is you have to wait. So the next day you take a little screenshot, just private message me on Facebook. All right. You can go to Amplified Network Marketing or the Kick-Ass Life and just say that. And we'll put everyone's name into a draw and I'll draw it live on the show. I'll put my hand in a little pot, pull it out, and we'll give away some coaching. How's that? And by the way, don't forget to go to pamgrout.com, pamgrout.com, and make sure you pick up that book. So, great hanging out. I'll see you on the other side. I forgot what show I'm doing now. And again, I look forward to having you on the new show. And especially, again, one of the things I want to do is help more people become financially free. And, you know, we've helped create almost 100 millionaires. Well, actually, 100 millionaires, not almost, 100 millionaires. So there's a lot of reasons to listen. If you don't have a vehicle right now that works, then, you know, give me a chance. Let me educate you. And you can always say no, but you can't always get free education, right? With that being said, I'll see you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.